Hello everyone, this is Stan speaking, your Data Role podcast host. And let me welcome you to today's episode where we'll be talking about game certification, compliance, but not only. My today's guest is Michael Mladenov, the COO of RiskCherry, the unique independent test lab for games on the iGaming market. Michael, hello, and let's get you introduced to our audience.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here. So, as Stan already mentioned, I'm Michael. I'm CEO of RiskCherry, the newest and hottest test lab in the industry. A couple of firsts for myself. I landed my first job in the iGaming industry back in 2016. I joined studio for SWAT games called Red Tiger. My first job was there. I was a team leader. Let me refresh my memory what I've been through. So yeah, I started as a team lead of a team of business analysts. Then I made my way up to the ladder. At the end, around 2019, I was director of project management and operations, leading a big part of the tech side of the company. In 2019, NetEnt acquired Red Tiger. I kept my role. Then a year later, when Evolution acquired NetEnt together with Red Tiger, I also kept my role as a project manager and operations director at Red Tiger, but also accepted another role of head of engineering product compliance in Evolution, where I was responsible for the brands in the wider group in terms of how do we implement various requirements from the different market across the group in some seamless way, basically for the common platform and etc. And I was in Evolution until 2022, when I joined RiskCherry in the current position. Actually, I was with the company for a couple of months as an advisor before that, and they offered me the role, and I thought that's my thing. It's interesting, actually, that it's second time when I joined a startup. That was the case with Red Tiger initially. I wasn't really aware of the industry in the first place. I was working in Lufthansa Technik till from 2011 until 2016 as different positions, but I was a process analyst at the end. And at some point, I just got tired of the big corporate world and wanted to join something smaller. So it happened twice now.
Okay, perfect. And now I'm going to ask you to cast some light on the game test lab industry, because actually to me it's something that is really mysterious. What from my side, I've been usually working with operators, game providers. I know that every game needs to be certified, but that's basically all that I know right now. So I'm really curious to find out how would you actually present this perspective. So what's the game test lab industry about?
Yeah, it's an interesting niche in the industry. It's interesting that most of the people in the industry don't really know details about that, even though it's part of pretty much every product, which is alive out there in the regulated markets. So the independent testing laboratories are some kind of bridge between the regulators and the game studios and casinos, depending on what has to be certified. The test labs has to be accredited against a couple of different ISO standards. It's usually 17020 for inspection, 17025 for testing, and 17065, which is the newest one. It's for certification. It's not that widely required yet, but it is getting traction. This accreditation happens with the national accreditation body of some European country. In our RiskCherry case, that's NEB Malta. So this is a really heavy process, to be honest. Like, it took a couple of years to get prepared, to get approved, and etc. And that's only the first part. Then when laboratory is being accredited, then it starts to apply for different market approvals, like to be approved by the UKGC in UK, MGA in Malta, and etc. And based on the scope of the ISO of the testing laboratory, it is then allowed to start certifying some products against the regulatory requirement. And this is only when the laboratory starts working with actual clients. In the case of RiskCherry, we are specializing in the RNG games and RNG itself industry. Like, we are not interested as of now to provide all different kinds of audits and stuff. We are focused on game certification, mostly because most of us are coming from game studios and we've been the client. So that's really important in our case. And after the approvals are like acquired and like the clients start ordering certifications for their products, what the test lab has to do is to verify if the first to categorize the product is like, it can be like a pure SWAT game. It can be some newer kind of arcade or crash game or something like this, which doesn't fall into like specific regulations yet. And it is really interesting for us to think of how to categorize this game, what to what requirements can we map it, and etc. Once we do that, we have to verify the game against these requirements and to make sure it is compliant with all. If so, then we issue a certificate, and this is when the game studio can actually go live with the game, with the Zims.
Okay, and when it comes to the process of the game certification, like, what are the different steps, like from submission to certification? Is it standardized, or sometimes there's like different ways or paths to follow?
Yeah, in our case especially, we tend to automate and to standardize everything as much as possible. And we think that's the right way to do it, and that's the right way to scale. Like, of course, we have to scale also with people, with smart people. But most of the things in terms of like a preparation of the project and etc. are automated for us. In our case especially, it happens through our portal. Our clients are able to create their orders through our portal, which is integrated with our internal system. So once they place the order, it is going to create all the tickets and everything required internally in the systems. Our people will see the new order and we'll start planning it, and etc. So, but what are the different steps? It's like submission, then we review the order, if it is something that we can do, if it is having all the necessary provisions, because like when we have to certify a game, we should receive a lot of provisions with it, like parts of the source code of the game and the platform, some parse sheets and accesses to some environments where we can access the gaming product, etc. And then once we plan the game, it is usually within a couple of days, we engage with the game. We start executing test cases in our testers team while our mathematicians are doing the review of the logic of the game in terms of source code reviews and parse sheets, simulations, and etc. of the game. So we can, like, there are usually two folds, like testing the interface of the game and also at the same time doing the backend and logic validation.
All right, perfect. I also know that you have a vast experience across different markets, so be it UK, Denmark, Sweden, Netherlands, Spain, Ontario. And my question would be, if you were to name some differences between the country regulation, especially in the context of the RNG, because you said that you guys are focused on the RNG. So what would you tell? What are those differences between the regulations?
Oh, there, like, that's like this question only, we'll need 2-3 complete episodes to just answer this one. So I'll try to summarize it. But first, very first thing is like how the markets are regulated. Like, you probably know that they are like white markets, gray markets, black market. Like, either it is super highly regulated with local regulation, either it is not forbidden to have iGaming, but no local framework, or it is forbidden. So that's the very first thing. Second thing is the licensing regime in the most of the market, the white market, there is a requirement for B2C license, which is applicable for the casinos. And then they are obliged to make sure that the game studios they work with are certified and they have forwarding everything that they should. Lately, more and more markets are introducing B2B licenses as well, which is basically where the game studios should also be licensed, or not only the casino. And then it comes like the next level of the regulatory world would be if there is a local framework for the game certification. Some markets like MGA, for example, like that's the Maltese market, they have local requirements, but also tend to approve the games that following the UKGC, like the United Kingdom framework and certificate. So that's the next part. And when it comes to the actual requirements, I would say like 75% of the requirements across the gaming worlds are like similar. They may be like different wording, but they tend to verify pretty much the same things. But there are also some like unique specific requirements. Like the simplest one is like some market doesn't regulate how often can a player bet. But some markets like UK introduced a requirement for minimum 2.5 seconds between the bets. For Denmark, there are similar requirements, but it is 3 seconds, etc. Some markets would have like minimum RTP, return to player requirements, some won't, and etc. For example, in UK, the regulator introduced something that is not required for other markets, which is called net position and session timer. That's like the user have to be able to see during their whole gaming session how much they bet compared to how much they lose, and then are they in a positive or negative balance from the gaming session and stuff like this. And yeah, to be honest, they are like a lot of, maybe I shouldn't fall into the rabbit hole here and like dig deep into the differences, but in general, there are really, really a lot of differences, not that many in terms of number, but if there is a difference, usually it is something that is not that easy to implement.
So these peculiarities make for like specific developments, like this timer, etc. I guess that then you have one game, but it's appearing under different flavors, as it needs to be accounting for all.
Yeah, so it's actually super like interesting process for the studios and also for us when we verify that, because like the studios they should have the same game basically. Like they don't want to have 10 different versions of the same game for the different markets. So they tend to keep the logic of the game, like the backend of the game, the same. But it's usually on the on the client side, like the front end, when they implement the differences, like for the seconds, for session timers and stuff like this. So it's interesting for them to control. And which brings me actually to something else, like on top of the certification for different markets, the different markets are having different kinds of reporting audit activities. So like the different regulators are having different ways to verify that the studios and the casinos are following the regulations, right? So for UK, there is like annual security audit. And also there is annual games audit, which covers like a lot of things of like RTP monitoring, change management, and a lot of other things. For Denmark, there are more of these audit requirements. They have change management program. They have the information security, penetration testing, vulnerability assessment, and others. So it's not easy to follow all the different requirements.
Okay, clear. And if you were to name, from your experience, the most and the least regulated market, and how does that impact your work? We know that there's specific amendments that need to be made, both to the process, to the scope of the certification. But what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say they are easy markets. Like all are really important, and you should be like treating them the same. But some markets, like I mentioned already, UK and Denmark, Sweden, Netherlands, Italy, like in Europe, these are the major ones and like the highly regulated, I would say. In the US, like Pennsylvania and New Jersey maybe are like even harder compared to the European ones in terms of how to get there and how to get the product.
Okay, and when it comes to the future, to potential changes of the legal framework, do you anticipate any changes that would be coming over in the following months or years? And what's the impact of those changes on your activity or maybe new markets that are appearing on the horizon? How does it look like?
To be honest, like for the people that are not in this part of the industry, they wouldn't really think how often some things are changing. Like some regulators are having updates annually for their framework, either introducing new standards, either just making some cleanup of something, etc. For example, in Denmark, there is a new regime coming into force from 1st of January 25. and it is gonna start requiring a license for the game suppliers as well. And they also introduced some changes into the framework, not that many. So it will not be that hard for the studios to adapt. Like, they'll have to get a license, obviously, but and to like be obliged to follow some new requirements for them from a legal perspective. But from product perspective, they don't have that many new. But in the same time, for us, like the laboratories, that means that we should extend our ISO. So it is a lot of work, like paperwork and preparation and audit and etc. for us to get approved for these changes. The good thing, like for parts of the industry, is that there will be some grace period until the summer. So meanwhile, it is okay to use the old and the new framework.
Perfect, perfect. So I'm wondering also, because on one side, what we hear, and as you mentioned, that the perspective might change depending on where you sit as a operator or as a test lab, especially in the context of, let's say, when we're an operator, sometimes you might just say, okay, there's the act is in place, there's some statements that change and need to be reflected in the operations. But if I get it right, from your perspective, there's much more work around this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because for the studios and for the casinos, they should verify if there's something major they should do, if there's something new they should certify or implement, and if the changes are requiring a recertification of the already live product. But for us, even if one comma in the regulatory standard changes and they issue a new version, even though it's just a comma change, we need to go through the full process for extending our ISO with the new thing, because in the certificates that we issue, it is going to be written against which we standard we certify the product, right? And if it is the old standard, then it is not really valid, even though it's absolutely the same content.
Okay, clear. Also, something that I'd like to ask you, the biggest challenges in your everyday work. From my side, what I see is that, especially in the regulated markets, you need to make sure you're compliant as an operator when it comes to the different version of the game. I know that the test process is in place, and now I know much more thanks to the questions that we just covered. Also, the topic of the SHA-1s is in place. And last time when we met and we discussed briefly, I remember that you have mentioned this interesting term about the compliance paradox. I would be really curious if you could cast some more light to our audience on these topics.
Yeah, that's how I call it, because I was part of a couple of different studios. I work with many different studios now. I have friends in various studios and etc. And there is something that I feel in, but it is coming purely from my experience, because I've been on the both sides. I've been dealing with product and development. I was dealing with compliance, and now I deal with certification from the point of view of the supplier of the service. So when a new studio is established, or there is a new product or whatever, it is usually a super creative process, right? Like some cool, creative, smart people sit in a room and say, hey, I want to build this super great product. I want to bring some innovations to it. I want it to be that and that. And they involve like developers, they involve art people and etc. And they start building beautiful, interesting product. But usually they don't really onboard a technical compliance expert on the team initially. And usually that leads to a thing that is like, when the product has to be certified, then it feels like the compliance is something super limited, you know, like you have to cut that from your product, you have to change that, and you feel like it is really your super cool product. But if you look at it from another perspective, and you had onboarded like the right compliance expert from the very beginning in the core team, then you can actually leverage the requirements, because you can build the product having this in mind. And okay, this is required, but we can do that and we can do that. So it is like you can literally leverage that instead of just limiting your product at the end. And I think that this is something that happens too often. I see it too often. And the studios should understand that compliance is something to be leveraged, not to be afraid of, and not to be limited by. And that's when you're building the product. But when you, like, even though you build the product, you get certified, you enter some certain market, the next thing is that, how do you maintain this? Like, because as you mentioned, there is like the critical components of the game, which is usually like the game logic, the RNG, and other aspects of the games in the platform. They are considered critical for the game, and that are the files which we do a source code review on. We like run simulations, verify in different ways, and we extract the SHA signatures of this, right? So this is going to be put into the certificate of the game. And if any of these SHA signatures changes, then the certificate is not valid anymore, right? And I've seen cases where like studios tending to be super efficient in terms of development. They reuse the same files for various games, then etc. They build a new type of game. They had to change this file, and they don't realize that this is gonna ruin the certifications of the past certified games, right? This is something really dangerous because they may find about it too late during an audit or something like this. They may never find about that and just keep being non-compliant without knowing it. And that's super dangerous thing. And it's super easy to happen and to miss that, right? So you should have really strong processes in terms of change management and how do you actually track, approve, report changes and trigger a certification when needed. That's super important. And usually it's not in the list of the top things that people do when they're building either a company or a new product.
That's clear. Moving on to the part that is at the heart of what I do myself, so data and analytics, I'm really curious to find out how, within the scope of the activities of your company, how do you actually use the data and analytics to make decisions?
It's I would say this one is having two different aspects in our business. One thing is, as I mentioned, we have to run simulations to do statistical analysis, like Monte Carlos and etc. On either the like when we are certifying an RNG, we run Die Harder tests, NIST tests, Kolmogorov-Smirnov, and many others to verify the randomness, the predictability, and etc. of the product. So we run this, we read this, and we make decisions upon them. That's for the RNGs. For the actual games, it depends if they are simulated or calculated games. For the calculated games, then we should basically calculate the algorithms and verify the results of the games and map them to the real behavior of the game and see if that maps to what we have. And in terms of the simulated games, then we run these kind of simulations with our own simulators or sometimes the simulators of the suppliers, but we have to do heavy source code reviews on them and etc. to verify that they do what we need them to do. So that's one aspect of what we do with data analytics, right? The other part is purely business, which is like when we extract in business intelligence the data from all the past projects, like all the non-compliances, like the books that we raise for different clients, how much time it takes for different clients, for different markets, for what's the gap between markets for us, and so on and so on. And we use all of this data to help us make better decisions in terms of pricing, in terms of our own planning targets and everything that you can imagine. And also we, you know, there is a funny term, the biggest room in the world is the room for improvement, right? So we really believe in continuous improvement here, and that's what we use the data for usually. Like we are making informed decisions based on data. We don't just, we think that's going to be better. We want to, I personally want to see some proofs that something needs changing, and there are some trends that we want to adapt against, like either for we should invest more R&D time for improving this with automations or hiring new people, building new teams, whatever. But you need, like, that's a way to see like bottlenecks and to see sometimes to see differences between clients for something that happens in their framework or the way they do things, and we should adapt as well. So that's are the two ways we use data for. I would say one is purely for business purposes, based on what we experience, and the other is part of our verification testing of the gaming product.
All right. One final question from my side. If you were to talk to new game providers, which I know that you do, what advice would you share with them when it comes to starting their studio and whenever there's the need to get the game certified?
Yeah, so I'll probably repeat some of what I already said, but I know that, like, first, I know it's super exciting to bring your brave, great ideas into reality, but don't underestimate the need of compliance expert in the core team and use this as an advantage and leverage early so you don't end up of being limited later and have to do some changes in your product that you don't want to. Second thing is to spend a little more time preparing before they execute, either entering a new market, releasing a new product or something like this, because the new market are usually having a need for like reporting activities, audit activities and stuff like this. And studios often don't prepare well and I will think later. Like we enter the market, we start getting integrations, we have start having traffic, but we'll think later. We have 1 year to prepare for that. So don't do that. Like prepare in advance, make sure that you have the right process and mechanisms in place. And 13th is, I would say that to use Data Waste Advisor, like data whispers, you know, in your ears, you know. It's like either you use it for data-driven development, which is like super exciting thing, like to track, measure the behavior of users and to see how they react to different things and to like use it for that. And also they can for sure use it for security purposes, like seeing some behavior in some users and something that they would like to be protected. So I don't know if it is too long, but that are the 3 points that I would really highlight, especially for new studios.
Perfect. That's going to be it for today's episode. So thanks a lot, Michael, for this really insightful conversation.
Thank you. Thank you, too. It was a pleasure.
And just to sum it up, I believe now that the certification and game testing process will not be of a surprise anymore to our listeners. I'm also glad that you shared your broader perspective on data and analytics as well. So that's going to be it for now. This was Stan signing off for the moment. And remember, keep rolling with the data.